April 28th from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. Please continue to support listener-sponsored WBAI Radio, 99.5 FM, New York. For more information on the easy ways that you can contribute, check our website at WBAI.org. Thank you.
On Sunday, April 15th at 11 p.m., Sugar in My Bowl presents guitarist-composer Nels Klein. Join us as we find out that there's more to Nels Klein than Wilco and his latest Nels Klein 4 release. That's Sunday, April 15th at 11 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web.
We cannot be silent. Two of the most extreme militarists just joined the Trump administration, Mike Pompeo and John Bolton. These right-wing hawks are the most strident forces calling for war with Iran and North Korea and new attacks on Palestine. We must challenge escalating U.S. wars at home and abroad. Resist these ominous appointments, the raids and roundups of our immigrant and Muslim sisters and brothers, the cutbacks in every social program, and the escalating racism and police violence. That's Sunday, April 15th at 2 p.m. Join a New York City rally at Herald Square, 34th Street and 6th Avenue. Following the rally, a march to Trump Tower.
Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund, and this is a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. And wow, you know what kind of a show I have prepared for you? If so, tell me, because I don't. But it'll be fun, so stay tuned. Yes, there will be Facebook Live. I'm just slow. Thank you.
was a ghostly galleon tossed upon the cloud seas. The road was a ribbon of moonlight over the purple moon, and the highwayman came riding, riding, riding. The highwayman came riding up to the olden door. He had a French cocktail on his forehead, a bunch of lace on his chin, a coat of claret velvet, and breeches of brown doe skin. They fitted with never a wrinkle, his boots were up to the thigh, and he rode with a jewel twinkle, his pistol buds a twinkle, his rapier hilt a twinkle under the jeweled sky. And over the cobbles they clattered and clashed in the darkened yard, and he tapped with his whip on the shutters, but all was locked and barred. He whistled a tune to the window, and who should be waiting there but the landlord's black-eyed daughter, past the landlord's daughter, plaiting a dark red love knot into her long black hair. One kiss, my bonny sweetheart, I'm after a prize tonight, but I shall be back with the yellow gold before the morning light. Yet he would press me sharply and hurry me through the day, then look for me by the moonlight, watch for me by the moonlight, I'll come to thee by the moonlight, though hell should bar the way. He rose upright in the stirrups, he scarce could reach a hand, but she loosened her hair in the casement, his face burned like a brand, as a black cascade of perfume came tumbling over his breast, and he kissed its waves in the moonlight, oh sweet waves in the moonlight, and tugged at its rein in the moonlight, and galloped away to the west. Gypsy's ribbon looping the purple moon, a ragged troop came marching, marching, marching. King George's men came marching up to the olden door. They said no word to the landlord, they drank his ale instead, but they gagged his daughter and bound her to the foot of her narrow bed. Two of them knelt at a casement with muskets at the side. There was death at every window, hell at one dark window, for Bess could see through the casement the road that he would ride. They had tied her up to attention with many a sniggering jest. They had bound a musket beside her with a barrel beneath the breast. Now keep good watch, and they kissed her, she heard the dead man say, look for me by the moonlight, watch for me by the moonlight, I'll come to thee by the moonlight, though hell should bar the way. She twisted her hands behind her with all the knots feeling good. She writhed her hands till her fingers were wet with sweat and blood. They stretched and strained in the darkness, and the hours crawled by like years, till now on the stroke of midnight, called on the stroke of midnight, the tip of her finger touched it, the trigger at least was hers.
No.
horses' hooves ring clear. Toddle ah, toddle ah, in the distance, where they deaf, they did not hear. Down the ribbon of moonlight, over the brow of the hill, the highwayman came riding, riding, riding. The redcoats looked to the priming, she stood up straight and still. Toddle ah, to the frosty signs, toddle ah, in the echoing night. Nearer came and nearer, her face was like a light. Her eyes grew wide for a moment, she drew a last deep breath. Then a finger moved in the moonlight, her musket shot at the moonlight. Shattered her breast in the moonlight, and warmed him with a dare. He turned his spur to the west, he did not know she stayed. Bowed with her head of the musket, drenched with her own red blood. Not till the dawn he hooted, his face could play to hear. Up as the landlord's daughter, the landlord's black-eyed daughter, had watched for love in the moonlight, and died in the darkness there. And back he spurred like a madman, shrieking a curse to the sky. With a white road smoking behind him, and his Arabia brandished high. Blood red were the spurs of the golden moon, wine red was his velvet coat. When they shot him down on the highway, down like a dog on the highway, and he lay in his blood on the highway, with a bunch of lace at his throat.
Larina McKennitt with The Highwayman. It's from her album, The Book of Secrets, which it's a lovely album, and I love her rendition of that song. Phil Oakes also did a tremendously wonderful rendition. And right now I'm scheming to play that, actually not necessarily that long from now, but I did say that I was totally unprepared, and that is true, but I'm an old hand at being unprepared on the radio, so this is nothing new. Whoa, whoa. We have been having big moths around here. Maybe it'll be so kind as to come to this side and get on camera. Oh, and I should say for those when... See, here's the thing. And this is actually one of the things that I want to discuss. It's landing on my coffee thermos. You may not have my coffee. That is mine. Mine. So, if you want to watch... Oh my God, I think I got it. If you want to watch what I am doing and all that... You know, I don't know the word count. I can tell you somebody on Facebook is asking how many words is 25 to 40 minutes because they wanted to know what I thought was a good reading length. And yeah, writers know word count. I am not a writer. I am a producer and audio creator. And I usually go by page count. And I know my reading speed, time will vary depending on who's doing the reading. And as I always tell people when I do my class in how to read for an audience, read slowly. So a single page should be between 2 to 2.5 minutes. Unless there's dialogue, you know, regular he said, she said, ongoing dialogue, in which case it might be faster if you are, well, emoting. No, I didn't get that. Blamed moth, there it goes. Leave in peace, but leave. Okay, so here's the deal. For those who don't know, I have been for several months now getting out my spiffy phone and going to Facebook, not to gather your data, but because, and not just so that you can watch me on the radio, but because I believe that it really adds a new dimension to what it is we are doing. It's not about video. It's not about doing a video show in addition to or on the side of a radio show. It's because there is a community of people who are, yeah, okay. And one of them, who should know, says roughly 1,000 words reads at about 10 minutes. And you can figure from that, and I believe he's dead on accurate. And he's an actor. He knows. He's an actor and a writer. Hey, Charles. Charles Cooper. Yeah. Well, you see, if it's Mickey Spillane, you can get a page in warp factor 5. And it's and if it's Foucault, forget about it. Well, you see, this is where I disagree. In my class of how to read aloud, you know, let's take an action sequence. What I do is I read it haltingly. I wish I had a Mickey Spillane in front of me. Maybe I can get something online. Specifically Mickey Spillane, because he has that whole thing going on. Okay, that's Wikipedia. The restaurant. Yeah, show me a story, people. Not IMDb. Ah. Frank Morrison Spillane. Really? From Brooklyn? Really? I never knew that. Well, I'm just going to take that text and pretend that it's an action scene, and I will give it to you. As if, you know, the car turned the corner, and as he was doing that, he threw a punch at somebody outside. It's not what I would do. I would say, the car turned a corner, and he threw a punch at somebody outside. You keep it paced, because the most important thing when reading aloud is this isn't a movie on radio. You're using words, and... These are, did he really have a novel called The Erection Set? I bet he did. I've been in my sometimes profession as an editor of audiobooks. I've been doing some, oh yes, I remember that. See, I'm looking too much at Facebook. the Matt Helm novels, which are shockingly good. And I don't mean good in the, oh yeah, they're keen kind of sense. I mean, they're well written. They've got good stories. The characters are varied. They're not exactly multicultural because of the time in which they were written. But they're shockingly sophisticated. They are not the Dean Martin films by any means whatsoever, even the ones that were filmed as Dean Martin movies. They're just not. So I have dealt with, these are read by Stefan Rutnicki of Skyboat Media, and these, he knows exactly. This is second nature to Stefan. He gives you that pace. He gives you that stuff, and he will give you the action scene. It's not, he grabbed the gun. It's, he grabbed the gun. Keep that pace going. Okay. Now you see, I'm constantly, here's the thing. Okay, the advantages of doing Facebook Live. And then I'm going to take phone calls about this, so get ready. The advantages of doing Facebook Live are not just that you get to see me, but that you get to chat amongst yourselves. And you can even ask me questions. And if I can, I can look at the screen and see what people are saying. And I can respond to that, which you have heard me doing this morning. On the other hand, it can be, you've heard me get distracted already several times this morning. Like talking about Mickey Spillane and things like that. So, not so much on target. One listener wrote me and said, doing the Facebook Live is taking away from the pureness of doing your radio and just focusing on the microphone, on radio itself, and the art and the love of radio. And I think he had a point. But then I got an email from another regular listener who I also trust his opinion, and just happens to be two guys. One of them, English isn't even his second language, it's like his third or fourth. But the other side of it is that interactivity. It's not just listener phone calls. It goes beyond that, because you're also all talking to each other. Like in olden days, when we were at the church on 62nd Street, for those of you who really know WBAI's olden days, Bob Fass was capable of running a show by pressing all these different buttons on the phone and having people talk to each other at the same time. And some of them would be talking to Bob, and Bob would be addressing a lot of what they had to say. This was his cabal. This was his community that he built. And we sort of have that in Facebook in the form of old-style online chat. Pardon me. But there's an additional aspect. And this is the one that I really, really like about doing these Facebook Live things. And this is what the second listener who wrote me had a point. He said, yeah, there are problems with doing it, but because of the distraction and the fact that, by the way, not only am I engineering a console, the phone, two computers, and focusing on being on the air at the same time. But now I'm also dealing with Facebook's sometimes oblique interface. When I started one, a Facebook Live this morning, and It was sideways. My phone was not set to go into landscape. And now it is, and so it looks pretty good, except for the fact that because I'm using the front view camera, everything is reversed. That's a whole other issue. What I really, really like about the Facebook Live is that when the show is over, and I'm sitting on the bus going home, there's still people typing in comments about the show. And I can look at the various threads of conversation. And I can then actually type in and respond about the show. I may go home, go to sleep, wake up the next day, more comments have come in, and I can respond. More comments. There was a show I did about 2.5 months ago where somebody just listened on the archive and watched the Facebook Live. Actually, probably just watched the Facebook Live. There's that moth. And made a further comment in response to a comment somebody had made 2 months earlier. Yes, one Facebook viewer says, it's like a video phone meets a BBS, a bulletin board system. And that is exactly right. I came from the days of BBSs. I was first online approximately 1981. And while I was on CompuServe and The Source, I wonder if anybody remembers The Source, somewhat, I was on, 15, 20 local New York BBSs, as long as they weren't horrible in the way they treated people, which was oftentimes the case. But you could find good homes, and I did. Met my partner online that way, in fact, not because, and actually I met her 5 years after I met her online. In person, we only met 5 years, possibly even more. Because also on BBS's people use pseudonyms. So, that's what I love about Facebook Live. The fact that the conversation continues long after the show is done. Long after the show is over, the people on Facebook continue talking to each other, talking to me. I can write back. And yes, it's like a combination between video chat and a BBS. And the thing is, by the way, if you set your viewing device upright, and I must say I prefer to use a computer over the phone, then you can see the image of the video stream or recorded stream, and it's a stream either way, on about 3/4 of the screen and get the comments on the last corner. And that's that. Now that's a new medium. And yes, calling it a video show meeting BBS is a very good way of putting it, but it is distracting. It is very, very distracting. It is hard for me not to glance over while I'm talking to you, the listeners. Hard for me not to glance over and say, oh, hi, Bobby, or whoever. And, you know, I don't agree with that. I do agree with that. Oh, let me answer that question, or something like that. It's very, very distracting. And so I have to work hard not to look at it. So I'm looking for a way. I don't want to just give up this extra medium of Facebook Live or an equivalent. YouTube has now begun their equivalent of doing the live streams with interactivity. Took them long enough. I don't know why they didn't have that set up before they created Google Plus and doing their bizarrely designed video hangouts. And Facebook has a long way to go before they get it or almost anything right, as we know from testimony given to Congress yesterday and today. So, the question is, what should I do? Now, whenever I have a guest There's no issue. I point the camera at the guest, and I'm the off-screen voice. And it seems to work pretty well. People can hear me, can hear them. We'll be doing a show in July with, probably with the people of KaleidoCast. And so that we're going to have multiple guests there. I'm trying to keep the number down. They have five people to be interviewed at once. And that's sort of, no, not easy to moderate on the air. It would be easier, actually, with the Facebook thing for the people who are watching. But not for the radio audience out there. And there is, even with BAI's relatively diminished audiences, for every person watching on Facebook, there are at least 500 listeners. So you have to prioritize for the most. And you have to prioritize for the medium for which this was all created. And that is radio and the glory of radio. You don't get this, what we're doing on a podcast. Because I'm asking your opinion. And on a podcast, yes, on Facebook Live, you could type back to me. But on a podcast, that's all recorded and played back later. But here I can ask people if you have a thought about this, a question, a comment. You can call area code 347-335-0818. Again, area code 347-335-0818. You can't do that on a podcast. You can't do that on Facebook Live or YouTube or whatever. I don't know why, because Lord knows there are enough things like Skype out there and all that where you ought to be able to combine telephone calls with the rest, which is why it's so important that WBAI continues, and looks like it will continue, to be a broadcaster and not just a producer of audio for mobile media or your morning podcast or what have you. Those are all good, and we are getting into those. But No, sorry. Somebody is typing, Mark Lasser did that with PHC, Prairie Home Companion, for many years. He could probably tell you how to do it. No, it's never been done. I know media. Trust me. They may know that Garrison Keillor was filming or recording a show at a given time, but A, PHC, that's a radio show. So, of course, they could call in, but they could not take listener calls if they weren't on the radio. So whenever I've seen PHC, it was in a theater. And in that theater, no, they couldn't take calls. The best they could do was if somebody, put a question onto a paper airplane and threw it onto the stage. That was the only interactivity on Prairie Home Companion. Okay, no, you misunderstood. What is it I misunderstood? Talking to Joel, he hooked up the site. Oh, yeah, well, of course you can record it. I can do that. I'm recording right now on three different devices. That's no biggie. Using a VCR, how does that broadcast? Has to be transferred to digital. A VCR is analog. Doesn't work that way. Pardon me. In fact, I'm going to lower the mic and apologize to everybody about on Facebook about the fact that I'm going to be clearing my throat terribly. There, that's better. Okay, now, we're not getting any calls at 347-335-0818 to discuss this burning issue. So much for even my annoyance at that situation. But this, you can send me an email, Jim, at ourwolf.com, HOURWOLF. Or later on, you can actually watch this video stream and comment about this topic there. Oh, yeah, what I was saying is, I interrupt myself all the time, you see. On 3/4 of the screen, if you go full screen, you will see the video cast, the recorded one. And on playback, if you are full screen, you will see the comments in real time. It won't just be a thread. They will pop up as they are popping up right now in my peripheral vision. And I'm actually, and this is what I'm probably going to end up doing. I will continue doing the Facebook Lives. Facebook Lives. But I will have to ignore the screen and not look at it. By the way, when I have a guest and the phone is facing the guest, now I will see the comments, but now it still doesn't work. It still doesn't work because the guest doesn't see the comments and all that. So on the other hand, when I'm off the air, when I'm that is to say, when I don't have a live mic, when I am playing music, playing a recording, an interview, something like that, then I can join you in the world of interactivity. But until then, it is best that I don't look at the comments. And by the way, it's very, very difficult to scroll back. Some of these shows and events have been screwed up by the fact that I'm just using a 5.5-inch screen here for the camera, for my phone. And if I want to scroll back to see what people said earlier, and I touch the wrong thing, that ends the broadcast, the webcast, right there. So it's tetchy. What would be lovely, and I was just speaking to the ops person about this before I went on the air, to Tony Ryan, who runs the ops department, is it would be great if we had a video, if we had a monitor here that had a video button right in the middle so that it would be head on and facing the right way and all that. And then I could use my phone. Is that light flashing? These lights are flashing. Are those incoming calls? I don't think so, although I'll try them in a moment. Then I can have two cameras going and maybe even split screen. And there are ways, by the way, on Facebook Live to have multiple people talking at the same time. Oh, something else I will continue to do in Facebook Live, and this is cool. Anytime I record an interview with a guest with my trusty little recorder, then I will do a Facebook Live and at a certain point pay attention to it, even though it's just a recording being made for a show that will happen later on, or if I'm doing a panel at a convention or something like that. I did that at Heliosphere with an interview with Charles E. Gannon, which I broadcast the audio of recently. But you can see the video sideways, technical issue, on Facebook. So, are these calls, actually calls coming in, or are these lights just weirdly blinking? Let's see. Oh, I think the whole blessed, you put in another word for blessed, the whole phone thing is dead. I can't get anything to light up. Well, you know what we're going to do? We're going to go to another cut of music. And this one will not be Lorena McKinnitt, but it will still be Alfred Noyes. This is Phil Oakes.
The wind was a torrent of darkness among the gusty trees. The moon was a ghostly galleon tossed upon cloudy seas. And the road was a ribbon of moonlight over the purple moor. And the highwayman came riding, riding, riding. Yes, the highwayman came riding up to the old inn door. Over the cobbles he clattered and clashed in the darkened yard. And he tapped with his whip on the window, but all was locked and barred. So he whistled a tune to the window, and who should be waiting there but the landlord's black-eyed daughter. Yes, the landlord's daughter, plaiting a dark red love knot into her long black hair. One kiss, my Bonnie sweetheart, for I'm after a prize tonight. But I shall be back with the yellow gold before the morning light. Yet if they press me sharply and harry me through the day, oh, then look for me by moonlight. Watch for me by moonlight, and I'll come to thee by moonlight, though hell should bar the way. He did not come at the dawning, no, he did not come at the noon. And out of the tawny sunset, before the rise of the moon, when the road was a gypsy's ribbon, looping the purple moor, oh, a red coat troop came marching, marching, marching. King George's men came marching up to the old inn door, and they bound the landlord's daughter with many a sniggering jest. And they bound the musket beside her with a barrel beneath her breast. Now keep good watch, and they kissed her. She heard the dead man say, oh, look for me by moonlight. Watch for me by moonlight, and I'll come to thee by moonlight, though hell should bar the way. Look for me by moonlight, hoofbeats ringing clear. Watch for me by moonlight, were they deaf that they did not hear? For he rode on the gypsy highway, she breathed one final breath, then her finger moved in the moonlight. Her musket shattered the moonlight, and it shattered her breast in the moonlight, and warned him with her death. Oh, he turned, he spurred on to the west. He did not know who stood, bowed with her black hair a-flowing down, drenched with her own red blood. No, not till the dawn had he heard it, and his face grew gray to hear how Bess, the landlord's daughter, landlord's black-eyed daughter, had watched for her love in the moonlight and died in the darkness there. Back he spurred like a madman, shrieking a curse to the sky, with a white road smoking behind him and his rapier brandished high. Blood red were his spurs in the golden moon, wine red his velvet coat, when they shot him down on the highway, down like a dog on the highway. And he lay in his blood on the highway, with a bunch of lace at his throat, and still of a winter's night, they say. When the wind is in the trees, when the moon is a ghostly galleon tossed upon cloudy seas, when the road is a ribbon of moonlight over the purple moor, oh, the highwayman comes riding, riding, riding. Yes, the highwayman comes riding up to the old inn door.
The amazing, the incredible Phil Oakes. Here over WBAI in New York City, listener-sponsored, non-commercial Pacifica Radio, broadcasting at 99.5 FM. This program is Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. Let me tell you, if you perchance did not get to come last week to our reading at the New York Review of Science Fiction readings, with Chandler Klang Smith and Chris Claremont, well, you missed what was absolutely a wonderful event, a wonderful show. And I think I mentioned this last Wednesday when I was on the air. There was one point where a young gentleman, I am going to guess and say about 9 years old, came in with one of Chris's graphic novels. And we had a raffle of one of his more recent novels. And with all the people in the room who donated anything, holding a raffle ticket, that youngster, who's a huge X-Men fan, won. And I was thrilled. I was thrilled. I know I told this story. I'll be telling it years from now. The photographs will be available soon, but you can actually watch the event by going to the NYRSF Readings group on Facebook, NYRSF. You do not need to be a member of that group. I think, yes, you do need to be able to log into Facebook, but you don't have to be a member of the group in order to watch the reading. And if you would rather not Facebook, you can instead go to Livestream at livestream.com and choose the view option as opposed to the broadcast option, and then do a search on NYRSF or Claremont, Claremont. Now, if you'd rather just listen to Chris on the radio, join us on May... Windows 10, I have a calendar there where it belongs. Oh, it's next to where it belongs. Yes. May 3rd, Thursday morning, actually Wednesday night, May 2nd, going into Thursday morning, May 3rd, and instead of starting at 1 a.m. till 3, we'll be starting at midnight till 3, and Chris will be my guest. I was talking to him. I was so excited that season 2 of Legion, finally, his credit comes up at the end of show based on his writing. He's had, I don't know how many movies based on his writing. He says that of all the Marvel Comics movies that are made, all the Marvel Comics movies, Black Panther is the only one in which he did not create one of the characters. That means you watch this Spider-Man movie, he created that character. I was thinking, okay, how about Guardians of the Galaxy? And he looked at me and said, Star-Lord. Star-Lord? Yep. Chris created Star-Lord in some book that predated Guardians by a couple of years. It didn't go anywhere, and of course, Guardians initially didn't go anywhere either until they pulled it out of obscurity for the movies. And they took the character from one book into the other. And so it goes. So, my God, he has had an influence on the industry. And when I first had him on the air, I did not know he wrote comics. I knew him as a science fiction and fantasy writer, though initially science fiction. And he's got 9 or 10 books out. Well, somebody with Wikipedia around can figure it out. Okay. So, the next New York Review of Science Fiction readings will be May Day, May 1st. And initially, we were hoping to have a tribute to Alma Patterson with Cherie Renee Thomas, Andrea Harrison, and Pat Morgan. But I had screwed up by doing a double booking in October and saying, oh, well, let's reschedule that. And they were not able to do it. So we set a tentative date at that time for May 1st for a makeup. And now it seems like, well, they did what I did. They didn't remember. And they're not available. So don't know when they will be available. Hopefully we will get it together at some point. In the meantime, by a complete, very happy coincidence, the wonderful writer Joe Walton, who I had on this show maybe 5 months ago, will be in New York for that day and that day only. And so, May 1st, New York Review of Science Fiction readings at 388 Atlantic Avenue between Hoyt and Bond. Joe Walton and a player to be named later. I have a couple in mind. If you have a good idea of who to pair with Joe Walton, and bear in mind, it has to be somebody, you know, accessible to New York. Then, oh, send me an email. Do not put it on Facebook Live. We do not want to make this a public discussion because feelings can get hurt that way. But write me, and that may spark something. Okay, now, in coming in here, as I said at the beginning, truthfully, I do not have, by the way, yes, all right. I did not have an agenda set. I brought some recordings, and at the moment, I don't even remember what they are. But at last minute, I also grabbed a book with one of my favorite stories in it. And I've read it on the air several times, but not necessarily in the last couple of years. And it's short enough that if you've heard it before, you can hear it again. It is by R.A. Lafferty, a fascinating, wonderful writer who, compared to some other people in the field, remains relatively obscure. But not because of his writing, because his writing is brilliant. By the way, on Facebook right now, I'm not seeing, not that I want to read the comments, but I haven't seen one go by in about 10 minutes or so. So somebody do me a favor and just press like an enter key just to let me know that it is working and hasn't gone the way of BAI's phone system. Because I also see that the number of people watching. Ah, thank you. Thank you. There we are. Okay. Good. Thought we were losing everything. Because also the number of people who are watching live dropped off. So, there is a collection from many years ago called A Day in the Life, edited by Gardner Dozois. It is an anthology of not news stories, but collected stories, and they are all intended to be covered in the space of 24 hours. All of the stories take place within one day. And this one, a satirical story about the pace of life, published in 1965 in Galaxy magazine. Is, I think, one of the best examples and funniest examples of the lost art of satire. There's still satire today, but sometimes it's much more biting, which, you know, post 9/11 and in the times of He Who Shall Not Be Named, let's just call him number 45. It's hard for some people to find certain kinds of satire. And where do you go after Network and, you know, the Paddy Chayefsky school? But some of them are not ubiquitous, but evergreen. They stay with us all the time. And R.A. Lafferty's stories, I would say, are universally come from many interesting places, including the understood, this is a man who drank, among other things, and was apparently, I had not realized, I don't know if he was a devout Catholic, but very Catholic, Raphael Aloysius Lafferty. And you can figure out the rest from there. But what he left us were his stories and his words. Now, pardon me while I try to get into voice, because this is not just narrative. There's more to it than that. Slow Tuesday Night by R.A. Lafferty. A panhandler intercepted the young couple as they strolled down the night street. "Preserve us this night," he said as he touched his hat to them. "And could you good people advance me $1,000 to be about the recouping of my fortunes?" "I gave you $1,000 last Friday," said the young man. "Indeed you did," the panhandler replied. "And I paid you back tenfold by messenger before midnight." "That's right, George, he did," said the woman. "Give it to him, dear. I believe he's a good sort." And so the young man gave the panhandler $1,000, and the panhandler touched his hat to them in thanks and went on to the recouping of his fortunes. As he went into Money Market, the panhandler passed Ildefonsa Impala, the most beautiful woman in the city. "Will you marry me this night, Ildi?" he asked cheerfully. "Oh, I don't believe so, Basil," she said. "I marry you pretty often, but tonight I don't seem to have any plans at all. You may make me a gift on your first or second, however. I always like that." But when they had parted, she asked herself, "But whom will I marry tonight?" The panhandler was Basil Bagel Baker, who would be the richest man in the world within an hour and a half. He would make and lose four fortunes within 8 hours. And these, not the little fortunes that ordinary people acquire, but titanic things. When the Ababeus block had been removed from human minds, people began to make decisions faster and often better. It had been the mental stutter. When it was understood what it was and that it had no useful function, it was removed by simple childhood metasurgery. Transportation and manufacturing had then become practically instantaneous. Things that had once taken months and years now took only minutes and hours. A person could have one or several pretty intricate careers within an 8-hour period. Freddy Fixico had just invented a Manus module. Freddy was at Nyclotops, and the modules were characteristic of these people. The people had then divided themselves, according to their natures and inclinations, into the Aurorians, the Hemorrhobians, and the Nyclotops, or the Dawners, who had their most active hours from 4 a.m. till noon, the Dayflies, who obtained from noon to 8 p.m., and the Nightseers, whose civilization thrived from 8 p.m. to 4 a.m. The cultures, inventions, markets, and activities of these three folk were a little different. As a Nyclotops, Freddy had just begun his working day at 8 p.m. on a slow Tuesday night. Freddy rented an office and had it furnished. This took 1 minute, negotiation, selection, and installation being almost instantaneous. Then he invented the Manus module, and that took another minute. He then had it manufactured and marketed. In 3 minutes, it was in the hands of the key buyers. It caught on. It was an attractive module. The flow of orders began within 30 seconds. By 10 minutes after 8, every important person had one of the new Manus modules, and the trend had been set. The module began to sell in the millions. It was one of the most interesting fads of the night, or at least the early part of the night. Manus modules had no practical function, no more than had some mechie verses. They were attractive, of a psychologically satisfying size and shape, and could be held in the hand, set on a table, or installed in a module niche on any wall. Naturally, Freddy became very rich. Ildefonso Impala, the most beautiful woman in the city, was always interested in newly rich men. She came to see Freddy about 8:30. People made up their minds fast, and Ildefonso made hers up when she came. Freddy made his own up quickly and divorced Judy Fixico in small claims court. Freddy and Ildefonso went honeymooning to Paraiso Dorado, a resort. Oh, it was wonderful. All of Ildi's marriages were. There was the famous floodlighted scenery, the recirculated water of the famous falls was tinted gold, the immediate rocks had been done by Rambles, and the hills had been contoured by Spall. The beach was a perfect copy of that at Merivale, and the popular drink that first part of the night was blue absinthe. But scenery, whether seen for the first time or revisited after an interval, is striking for the sudden, intense view for it. It is not meant to be lingered over. Food, selected and prepared instantly, is eaten with swift enjoyment, and blue absinthe lasts no longer than its own novelty. Loving for Ildefonso and her paramours was quick and consuming, and repetition would have been pointless to her. Besides, Ildefonso and Freddy had taken only the one-hour luxury honeymoon. Freddy wished to continue the relationship, but Ildefonso glanced at a trend indicator. The Manus module would hold its popularity for only the first third of the night. Already had been discarded by people who mattered, and Freddy Fixico was not one of the regular successes. He enjoyed a full career only about one night a week. They were back in the city and divorced in a small claims court by 9:35. The stock of Manus modules was remaindered, and the last of it would be disposed of to bargain hunters among the donors who will buy anything. "Whom shall I marry next?" Ildefonso asked herself. It looks like a small night. Bagel Baker is buying, ran the word through Money Market, but Bagel Baker was selling again before the word made its rounds. Basil Bagel Baker enjoyed making money, and it was a pleasure to watch him work as he dominated the floor of the market and assembled runners and a competent staff out of the corner of his mouth. Helpers stripped the panhandler rags off him and wrapped him in a tycoon toga. He sent one runner to pay back 20-fold the young couple who had advanced him $1,000. He sent another with a more substantial gift to Ildefonso and Paula, for Basil cherished their relationship. Basil acquired title to the trend indication complex and had certain falsifications set into it. He caused to collapse certain industrial empires that had grown up in the last 2 hours and made a good thing of recombining their wreckage. He had been the richest man in the world for some minutes now. He became so money-heavy that he could not maneuver with the agility he had shown an hour before. He became a great fat buck, and the pack of expert wolves circled him to bring him down. Very soon he would lose that first fortune of the evening. The secret of Basil Baker was that he enjoyed losing money spectacularly after he was full of it to the bursting point. A thoughtful man named Maxwell Mauser had just produced a work of actinic philosophy. It took him 7 minutes to write it. To write works of philosophy, one used the flexible outlines in the idea indexes. One set the activator for such a wordage in each subsection. An adept would use the paradox feed-in and the striking analogy blender. One calibrated the particular slant and the personality signature. And it had to come out a good work, for excellence had become the automatic minimum for such productions. "I will scatter a few nuts on the frosting," said Maxwell, and he pushed the level for that. This sifted hands full of words like catonic and heuristic and prosimedes throughout the thing so that nobody could doubt that it was a work of philosophy. Maxwell Mauser sent the work out to publishers and received it back each time in about 3 minutes. An analysis of it and reason for rejection were always given, mostly that the thing had been done before and better. Maxwell received it back 10 times in 30 minutes and was discouraged. Then there was a break. Ladian's work had become a hit within the last 10 minutes, and it was now recognized that Mauser's monograph was both an answer and a supplement to it. It was accepted and published in less than a minute after this break. The reviews of the first 5 minutes were cautious ones, and then real enthusiasm was shown. This was truly one of the greatest works of philosophy to appear during the early and medium hours of the night. There were those who said it might be one of the enduring works, and even have a holdover appeal to the Donners the next morning. Naturally, Maxwell became very rich, and naturally, Ildefonso came to see him about midnight. Being a revolutionary philosopher, Maxwell thought they might make some free arrangement, but Ildefonso insisted it be marriage. So Maxwell divorced Judy Mauser in small claims court and set off with Ildefonso. Miss Judy herself, though not as beautiful as Ildefonso, was the fastest taker in the city. She only wanted the men of the moment for a moment, and she was always there even before Ildefonso. Ildefonso believed that she took the men away from Judy. Judy said that Ildi had her leavings and nothing else. "I had him first," Judy would always mock as she raced through small claims court. "Ah, that damned urchin," Ildefonso would moan. "She wears my very hair before I do." Maxwell Mauser and Ildefonso and Paula went honeymooning to Music Box Mountain, a resort. It was wonderful. The peaks were done with green snow by Dunbar and Fiddle. Back at the money market, Basil Baker was putting together his third and greatest fortune of the night, which might surpass in magnitude even his fourth fortune of the Thursday before. The chalets were Switzier than the real Alps, and had live goats in every room. Oh, and Stanley Skulldigger was emerging as the top actor and mago of the middle hours of the night. The popular drink for that middle part was Glatzenglubber, yew cheese, and wine rind over pink ice. And back in the city, the leading nightclubs were taking their midnight break at the Topper's Club. Of course it was wonderful, as were all of Ildefonso's. But she had never really been up on philosophy, so she had scheduled only the special 35-minute honeymoon. She looked at the trend indicator to be sure. She found that her current husband had been obsoleted and that his opus was now referred to sneeringly as Mauser's Mouse. They went back to the city and were divorced in small claims court. The membership of the Topper's Club varied. Success was the requisite of membership. Basil Bagel Baker might be accepted as a member, elevated to the presidency, and expelled from it as a dirty pauper from 3 to 6 times a night. But only important persons could belong, or those enjoying brief moments of importance. I believe I will sleep during the Donner period in the morning, Overcall said. I may go up to this new place, Coimenopolis, for an hour of it. They're said to be good. Where will you sleep, Basil?
Flophouse.
I believe I will sleep an hour by the Midian method, said Burn Banner. They have a fine new clinic, and perhaps I'll sleep for an hour by the Prasenka process and an hour by the Dormidio. Drackle has been sleeping an hour every period by the natural method, said Overcall. I did that for a half an hour not long since. I believe an hour is too long to give it. Have you ever tried the natural method, Basil?
Yeah,
always. Natural method and a bottle of red eye. Stanley Skulduggar had become the most meteoric actor imago for a week. Naturally, he became very rich, and Ildefonso and Paolo went to see him about 3 a.m.
I had him first, rang the mocking voice of Judy Skulduggar as she skipped through her divorce in small claims court.
And Ildefonso and Stanley Boy went off honeymooning. It is always fun to finish up a period with an actor imago who's the hottest property in the business. There is something so adolescent and boorish about them. Besides, there was the publicity, and Ildefonso liked that. The rumor mills ground. Would it last 10 minutes, 30, an hour? Would it be one of those rare Nyclotops marriages that lasted through the rest of the night and into the daylight off hours? Would it even last into the next night, as some had been known to do? Actually, it lasted about 40 minutes, which was almost the end of the period. It had been a slow Tuesday night. A few hundred new products had run their course in the markets. There had been a score of dramatic hits, 3-minute and 5-minute capsule dramas, and several of the 6-minute long play affairs. Night Street Dime, a solidly sorted opening, seemed to be in as the drama of the night, unless there should be a late hit. 100-story buildings had been erected, occupied, obsoleted, and demolished again to make room for more contemporary structures. Only the mediocre would use a building that had been left over from the Dayflies or the Donners or even the Nyctalops of the night before. The city was rebuilt pretty completely, at least 3 times during an 8-hour period. The period drew near its end. Basil Bagel Baker, the richest man in the world, the reigning president of the Toppers Club, was enjoying himself with his cronies. His fourth fortune of the night was a paper pyramid that had risen to incredible heights, but Basil laughed to himself as he savored the manipulation it was founded on. 3 ushers of the Toppers Club came in with a firm step. "Get out of here, you bum," they told Basil savagely. They tore the tycoon's toga off him and tossed him his seedy panhandler's rags with a 3-man sneer.
"All gone?" Basil said. "I gave it another 5 minutes.
"All gone," said a messenger from Money Market. "$9 billion gone in 5 minutes, and it really pulled some others down with it."
"Pitch the busted bum out," howled Overcall and Burn Banner and the other cronies.
Wait, Basil," said Overcall. "Turn in the president's crozier before we kick you downstairs. After all, you'll have it several times tomorrow night." The period was over. The Nyctalops drifted off to sleep clinics of leisure hour hideouts to pass their ebb time. The Aurorans, the Donners, took over the vital stuff. And now you would see action. Those Donners really made fast decisions. You wouldn't catch them wasting a full minute setting up a business. A sleepy panhandler met Ildefonso and Paula on the way. "Preserve us this morning, Ildi. And will you marry me the coming night?"
"Likely I will, Basil," she told him.
"Did you marry Judy during the past night?"
"I'm not sure.
Could you let me have $2, Ildi?"
"Out of the question.
I believe a Judy Bagelbaker was named one of the best-dressed women during the frou-frou fashion period about 2 o'clock.
Why do you need $2?
"A dollar for a bed and a dollar for red-eye. After all, I sent you $2 million out of my second. I keep my two sorts of accounts separate. Here is $1, Basil. Now be off. I can't be seen talking to a dirty panhandler. Thank you, Ildi. I'll get the red eye and sleep in an alley. Preserve us this morning. Bagel Baker shuffled off whistling Slow Tuesday Night. And already, the Donners had set Wednesday morning to jumping. Slow Tuesday Night by R.A. Lafferty.
I read the news today, oh boy, about a lucky man who made the grade. And though the news was rather sad, well, I just had to laugh. I saw the photograph. He blew his mind out in a car. He didn't notice that the lights had changed. A crowd of people stood and stared. They'd seen his face before. Nobody was really sure if he was on the house of law. Army had just won the war. A crowd of people turned away, but I just had to look. Having read the
dream. I
Wonderful note, isn't it? Do I have to tell you? Yeah. One needs to mention that that was A Day in the Life by The Beatles. And before that, Slow Tuesday Night by R.A. Lafferty. If I had to take, I would say like 10 stories and say, these are Hour of the Wolf classics. Go from when Margot Adler, whose birthday would have been next week, well, her birthday is next week, go from Adler to the present day, and she and I have been the only two hosts in that time, then and there were 10 stories that are all-time favorites of Hour of the Wolf. Not the best favorites. This is one of them for its brevity, its genius, its comedy. And written in 1965, okay? 50-plus years ago, 52, 53 years ago. It's up to date. It's not only up to date. If somebody published it now, they would say, that's, about Facebook. It's about the internet. That's about the speed of life that people are living with Twitter and other social media. Yet there's no computers, no social media, no nothing like that within the story. That's how relevant, how much of a genius Lafferty was. He was truly universal in his thought and writing. This is Hour of the Wolf over WBAI in New York City. Listener-sponsored, non-commercial Pacifica Radio at 99.5 FM over WBAI.org. And for right now only... Yes, Heather, I'll get you in a moment. only on Facebook Live, where people can come in and chat, where one person... this is another problem with the Facebook debate I had with myself earlier. And by the way, I got the phones working, which is to say I replugged them in. I probably unplugged it somehow. I have an idea how, because I pulled it within 5 feet of me. It's all the way over there. I pulled it forward, and that's I probably unplugged it. Now it's working, so if people want to call... We will take your calls at 347-335-0818. But getting back to the Facebook thing, and among the stories, one viewer, said, looking for Kadak, 1D, by the way, and buy his bootstraps. Yes, absolutely, although I'm not sure if it's buy his bootstraps or all you zombies, which are essentially the same story. Now, by his bootstraps, why am I forgetting his last name? Fellow passed away a few years ago, did a radio series called Beyond 2000, hosted by Harlan Ellison, that had some really brilliant stuff. And the first thing they ever did was the best thing that they ever did. And that was by his bootstraps. And the reader was Richard Dreyfuss. And you don't do too much better than that. Let me just see if I can give you Yuri's proper name. Beyond 2000. There we are. Episode guide. That will do, Google. Thank you. No, they haven't. What? TV series? IMDb called Beyond 2000 from 1985 to... No, this is a different Beyond 2000. This is one that was first from Pacifica Radio and later on NPR. Let me put in NPR. And it still says TV series. Okay. And then, here's a nice piece of hype. because it says unprecedented. It wasn't unprecedented. There were any number of shows that were that had predated it. It just hadn't been done in a long, long time. Yuri Rasovsky, thank you very much, with the Hollywood Theater of the Ear. And this is NPR blowing their horn, but what they're not actually mentioning is that Yuri, as the producer of the show, chose the stories and worked in them. But the production, the voices, everything itself was done for, I believe the company at the time was called Dove Audio. And I never knew about that. But I spoke to Yuri, who died way too young, 10 years ago maybe. And he gave me permission to broadcast specifically by his bootstraps over and over. And I can use that one fairly unlimited, but he gave me one-time rights for the rest of the series. And the rest of the series was, well, the quality of the stories varied, but the quality of the broadcast was genius. But the drama itself. And at one point, I am the audio editor and host of Lightspeed Magazine and the audio editor of Nightmare Magazine. We have one issue, one podcast of Lightspeed every Thursday. There'll be one coming up that I turned in but a few hours ago. There was a Nightmare Magazine. Oh, no. The next Nightmare is going to be a nightmare. It's for next. It goes live next Wednesday morning. And I'm not getting the recorded material until Monday, which gives me, well, only a couple of hours in which to edit the story. But it's under 2,000 words. Shouldn't be too difficult. And the readers at Skyboat Media, who do the audio for this, are all brilliant. So they are easy to edit. And Gabrielle DeCure, who did the Adam Troy Castro story that I just finished earlier today, that might be going live any minute now. Actually not, because where the editor, John Joseph Adams, is, it's still Wednesday. He won't throw the switch until it's Thursday in all the United States. So you got to wait another 35 minutes or so, and then go to lightspeedmagazine.com and you can listen to it. Or you can listen to any of the previous 359 podcasts that we have done so far. I only worked on about, 250 of those, and the rest were done by Jack and Kate, who is still the host of Nightmare Magazine. Why am I discussing all this? Have I gone another complete digression? No. I mentioned Stefan Rutnicki. Turns out that he, what is now Skyboat Media, and Gabrielle DeCure, and those people were the people that did the audio on Beyond 2000, including the aforementioned By His Bootstraps. They produced and directed it. And they hired Richard Dreyfuss. What Yuri did was chose the story, got Harlan. I'm not even sure if he got Harlan to be the host, because every bit of audio that Harlan has done since he moved to the West Coast, and he's done a lot of audio, has been through Stefan. And a lot of that now, not through me, but I'm the audio editor. So, small world. But maybe it's a small world in the audio drama world. It's not that small world in the audio book world, but that's another story. All righty. I'm ready for phone calls.
So, yes, bias, the difference between why I'm not sure of why bootstraps are all you zombies is because all you zombies, I get to read. Bias bootstraps, nobody can do what Richard Dreyfuss did in that. So while it's a favorite story, yes, it is, Dreyfuss got to do the reading. And for some reason, there are people who think I sound like Dreyfuss. And there may have been a point where that was true, and occasionally, unintentionally, I would come out with this sort of laugh, which, yeah, I think I got it. There is a very much a Richard Dreyfuss laugh. Okay, that's strange enough. It's when some people see me and say, do you know you look like Richard Dreyfuss? And I say, oh, no, I don't. Neither does Lister, who's just walking in for starting Burn Baby Burn Clappers in but a mere half hour. So, yeah, I think stuff is working, Lister. Come over here and wave to the audience. There. We'll switch the camera around so you can get into your costume. During sales of silver, we'll do that, or a little bit before. So now that I finally fixed the phone system, which I screwed up, by the way, what happened was, you see this little cable here? Okay, that was very taut, as in it had no give whatsoever. The phone was like beyond the clock over there. So I had to pull the phone over here so I could reach the bleeping thing. And in so doing, I probably unplugged that. But on the other hand, after a while, I finally figured it out. So there you go. Okay, phone calls, 347-335-0818. Good morning, you are on the radio. Turn your radio down, by the way. There is a delay.
I just did. I'm sorry.
Okay.
53 years ago, I remember reading that R.A. Lafferty story. It's a great story.
And I got to tell you, you know, while listing that among the 10 favorite Hour of the Wolf stories, it's also difficult to come up with 10 favorite R.A. Lafferty stories.
I must say, I think that the one thing that struck me about it when I first heard it or read it, and when you read it, is the names.
Yes.
There are authors who are masters of nomenclature. Lord Dunsany was an expert at names. When he would have names like Young Akanax and Young Irene and Weller and on and on and on.
Yeah, but arguably the best was Charles Dickens.
Was who?
Charles Dickens. He was a writer.
I know. Yeah, I know. By the way, thanks for playing the both versions, but I still prefer Loretta McKennitt. Marvelous melody. And that note at the end of the Beatles was in the key of E for your...
Thank you. Yeah.
Now, Il Defonso Impala.
Yeah.
Basil
or Basil Bagel Baker. And I'm not, you know, I know it's Bagel Baker, not Bagel Baker, because we all know what a bagel is. Yeah. But we can do Basil or we can do Basil. It depends on decision that I make when I come to it. This was not a rehearsed reading, as many people could probably tell. But I've read it, as I mentioned, several times before. But among the, Freddie Fixit.
Yes.
That's a simple one. Maxwell Mauser.
Oh, I love that.
Let's see what are.
I love the name Nyctalops.
Yes, Judy Skulldugger. Stanley Boy. What was Stanley's last name in here?
I thought it was Stanley Skulldugger, but who knows?
Oh yes, probably was because she
would
have married
him. It was Judy Fixigo.
Yes, that's right. And some of the others included. The people at the Topper Club, which included somebody named Overcall, which is a great name for people doing money and all that. And he does that throughout most of his fiction.
I have a question to ask you, and this is something that you've done because you have read aloud, and I, of course, love first nature to me, reading aloud, whoever it is, you or any number of people I know who've done it for a lot of people. Do you have a favorite story that you have? I mean, you mentioned 10 stories that you've read on Hour of the Wolf. Do you have a favorite story that you've read aloud that you like above all others?
No.
You don't? Okay.
You know, the you know, which is your favorite of your fingers?
I never thought of it that way. And the, all 10.
Yeah, you know, this is like, you can't ask a writer that either. What's, you, what's the favorite thing you wrote? The, you know, some one of the best answers I've ever got when I was stupid enough to ask that question came from, I think it was Zelazny, and I asked that question only because of the mood we were in, and it was a six-hour-long interview, and he said, it was blah, 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 because it bought this swimming pool. You know, and that one got picked up as a TV series and so forth. And outside of that, you're saying, you know, which of my children are my favorite? If there is an answer to that, it's a wrong answer.
I think the favorite story that people would say to you that you have had read on the air for laughter's sake, I mean, the R.A. Lafferty story is just mesmerizing, again, for the names and just for the concepts. The funny one, of course, is Looking for Kadak.
Kadak, and I never read it on the air.
No, I know that Harlan did.
Yes, I know. I produced it.
And I could hear it 50,000 times, James, and it would still make me peals of laughter on the floor.
Well, I do make a point of playing that at least once every couple of years, and I thought of playing it today, but today would have been a very, very inappropriate day for playing it because it is the day of the Holocaust Memorial.
Yes, I know.
So that day and Yom Kippur are the two days I would not play it. Any other Jewish holiday or non-holiday, I would broadcast it, but not on such days that involve any genocide for any group. And, of course, given that it is such a Jewish story.
It is.
Especially not on a day about Shoah.
I know.
And especially not by me, the son of two Holocaust survivors.
I do have one other question about stories that you read. You mentioned Gardner Dozois.
Yeah, he's the editor.
Did you ever read, or did he or someone ever read, or did he write a story years ago having to do with Winnie the Pooh?
No.
Oh, I thought there was a story.
There was a story that actually wasn't about Winnie the Pooh so much as it was about Christopher Robin.
That's it.
And that story was written by Al Sullivan.
Al Sullivan. Okay.
And in a way, it got ripped off for a movie that I believe is coming out, and I don't think it's going to get good reviews. But it basically, there is this meta thing going on now. And in that particular story, it's a very, very sad story. Because it's about Piglet and Pooh Bear. And
yeah, I know.
Eeyore and all that are way, I'm telling the audience. Please remember again, we're talking to many thousands of people.
I know.
So I'm not just talking to you. So it doesn't matter if you know or not. If we got off the phone, I would still be saying this. Okay, so. It has all the various characters, Kanga and Roo and Rabbit, and they're talking amongst themselves about when he might show up. And it becomes clear that, yes, at a certain point, Christopher Robin does enter the 100-acre wood for real. And what it is, it becomes significant that he has died. And it becomes this really lovely, bittersweet story. Now, I'm trying to remember. Let me go to Google and type in Christopher Robin, because I think, yeah, Christopher Robin 2018 is what is coming up. That's the name of the movie, Christopher Robin, an upcoming American fantasy comedy directed by Mark Forster. Mark Forster, who was the original writer of Shakespeare in Love before he turned that over to Tom Stoppard. And he can be good. We will see what they do with it. But I saw the trailer, and I have to say that it was stepping on memories that I do not care to have trod upon. You know, it's one thing to do the Pooh Bear stories and all that, but to do the mashup is problematic. But we shall see.
Why am I thinking that it was George Alec Effinger?
I don't know why you were thinking that. It was not Piglet. Because his nickname was Piglet.
No. I'm talking about the writer of that story.
Oh, God, help me. You're not listening.
No, okay.
George Alec Effinger was known as Piglet.
Oh, okay.
That was his nickname.
That was his nickname. Okay.
I knew the man.
I know you did.
For many, many years. He didn't write the story. Al Sullivan.
Okay.
Wrote the story in a zine called Scrap Paper Review. And you know who published it?
No.
Me.
Okay.
Okay, there's your answer. I'm going to move on.
Thanks.
Okay. Some people's kids. Telephone number here at WBAI is 347-335-0818. I may have fixed the phone system, but we still only have one line coming in. Jonathan reminds me of the story Unicorn Variations by Roger Zelazny, which is a wonderful story, and it's wonderful to read on the air. Imagine a chess game in which the destiny of much of the future is being played between a human and a unicorn. And there are all these little sphinxes about an inch long buzzing about and diving into people's beers in order to get tastes of the beer. It's just wacky, imaginative fantasy with an edge to it so that you actually go, oh, wow, there's actually something hanging in the balance. But the absurdity of it is so wonderful that you're not quite sure, and I'm not sure if Zelazny was quite sure, whether the story was a comedy or an adventure tale. The answer is both. But it's a lovely one. It's a lovely one, and maybe something I should read on the air again. I do believe Roger gave me the go-ahead on some of those things. Roger actually gave me the go-ahead on some audio drama that you would not believe the properties, because they have become so incredibly valuable. Incredibly valuable. Which means I don't dare go near them, because there are people that are playing around with billions of dollars for these franchises. Those not watching the skiffy science fiction headlines may be delighted or perhaps horrified to hear that Apple, the computer company, has purchased the rights to the Foundation trilogy, not the books, a TV series. The idea that Amazon will be doing a 6-year rehash of Lord of the Rings sucks. All they are trying to do is duplicate what George R.R. Martin was trying to do for 30 years to create Game of Thrones. And Game of Thrones was like George's what? Third television series, including the new Twilight Zone. This was the second of the three, where he was the story editor for seasons 2 and 3, and Harlan Ellison was for season 1. But George wrote a Zelazny story, as a matter of fact, The Last Defender of Camelot, another classic, which I do recommend. It starred Richard Kiley. And, I'm trying to remember who played his evil lady gay
in that story, in that TV production. Only a half hour long, but he got it. George had a thing for Zelazny, still does. He was a scholar of Zelazny, as he was of Tolkien. And he finally struck gold when he took the Shakespearean concept, that is Game of Thrones, or I should say A Song of Fire and Ice, because that is the name of the series, gang. Game of Thrones is book two. Fire and Ice is book one. He called the series A Song of Fire and Ice. Game of Thrones. That's HBO, people. Not George R.R. Martin. But I can't read it. I read about halfway through the first book. I made it through episode 8 of the TV series. That's season 1, episode 8. And George is so fascinated by it and scintillated by it that he's on a new TV series while everybody's waiting for him to finish the thing off. I got news for you folk. Not going to happen. My personal opinion, I haven't spoken to George in, 25 years. No, actually, we had some emails more recently than that. But, you know, he lived here. He lived in Hoboken, really. But he hung out here, crashed very often, not far from where we are now, about 3 or 4 blocks, where there was a whole crew of science fiction writers hanging out, including the aforementioned George Alec Effinger, who many years was known as Piglet. And then one time I saw him and I said, "Hey, Piglet." And he said, "Don't call me that." He had, after 10 years or so, he really, really got tired. But that was also to help differentiate between these two writers who lived in one brownstone on Pacific Street, which is, listeners pointing out where it is, about a block from here. And I think it would have been near Hoyt. So we're talking like less than 3 blocks from where we are right now. And also living in that same building was Frank Heller, he who had Midnight Matinee on WBAI and was the station's Svensson. What, you may ask, now that we have no more staff? This was a paid staff position, that he was our Svensson. That meant that he picked up the garbage, he ran the vacuum cleaner, and walked around saying, "Yes, would you please mind moving? It is time to clean the room. I am Svensson. It is time for me to clean." Heller was also one of the original people with National Lampoon Radio Hour and exceedingly talented songwriter and musician. And I have to look. Oh, my God. Talk about great writers. We have one viewing. Can I mention your name? He whose initials are AP. One of my favorite writers. I was talking about one of your books at great length just a couple of weeks. No, not a week ago, as a matter of fact. I think it was a week ago. I know it was at a Seder, probably, at any rate. But I would love to know if I can, if we can do a Skype call and get you on the air as a guest, or if you're coming to New York anytime soon. Sometimes Suchiritgul will be coming to New York, and we will record a show. And the following day, Scott Edelman will be our guest. So that's something else to look forward to. And of course, I mentioned Chris Claremont will be here on, the first Wednesday night in May. So anyway, what was I blathering on about? Wasting time. If you want to call in, by the way, telephone number is 347-335-0818. You know, for the people watching Facebook Live, I'm not sure if you folk get to hear the phone calls. You probably have to have a radio on at the same time. And if not a radio, you know, something that is streaming the audio live. You see, there's a problem with doing the Facebook Lives. Uh-oh. See, I talk about Facebook, and we lost the Wi-Fi signal. Due to poor wireless connection, your video has been paused. Considering moving to find a better signal. Yeah, well, I'm sort of stuck where I am, and the Wi-Fi signal here really sucks. Sorry about that, people. I'm sort of waving the phone in the air. But I do not know if it is going to return. Well, it just spins its little wheel trying to reconnect. Okay. But again, telephone number here is 347-335-0818. And open topics are favorite stories through the years. Yes, I was talking about all these properties that have been purchased and are being produced by all these various entities. So, as I said, the BBC has snatched up Foundation. Ah, okay, we're back. Wi-Fi was lost. Let me explain to the people watching on Facebook. So we're back on Facebook. Don't know if anybody is still there. Are you still there, folks? Let me, somebody hit a keyboard or something. Ah! Disconnected again. And this is, you know, just, we can't get a good router here. No comment. Oh, yeah, there will be comments, but they will be off the air where the various people who I would consider responsible can't get at them. Lord of the Rings again, Amazon? Really? Why? Now, admittedly, The Hobbit as a movie series stunk. Not sucked. Stunk. And sucked. The casting was really great. The effects of the first movie were awful because they did it 48 frames per second. That's double the usual rate. So you're watching in 3D on an IMAX screen at something that your eyes have almost never seen. This is worse than 4K. 4K video is vivid video. It's like looking at a great picture and all that. But watching something at 48 frames a second, if you moved your head while watching this movie, the image would go away. Not just the 3D would disappear. You had to be focused on it for a three-hour movie. And that's part one of a trilogy. And so, as the movie finally got to its climax, its finale, I was mesmerized, as was my partner. She and I were sitting there like having no idea what was going on because our heads were stuck in one position for almost 3 hours. And these images are coming in as an onslaught. It is very, very rare since then that I go to 3D screenings. And there are only about three or four movies ever that I would say are worthwhile seeing in 3D. Avatar is one. And Avatar is so... say what, Lester? 2001 is never in 3D. Why, how could it be? It's 50 years old. And we're not talking, you know, the red and green glasses. We're talking about, you know, actual, whatever the term is, 3D technology. No. Number one is Avatar. Now, Avatar is, without 3D, a lousy movie. But if you are wearing your 3D glasses and seeing it on a big screen and sitting in a good seat, it is so immersive. It's a roller coaster ride. It's like cotton candy. It's one of the best things that you can imagine. Watch it, you know, on a small screen, like on TV, and you'll say, I do not see the point.
of this movie. So, number two, Hugo, directed by Martin Scorsese, who basically said, oh, you people don't know how to make movies. This is how you make 3D. And Hugo really, really, really pays off. Wonderful film. Cave of Forbidden Dreams, which is a documentary, takes place in a cave. And there's a fourth movie which escapes me right now. Otherwise, you gain nothing by watching a movie in 3D. You lose about $4 or $5 in the ticket price. So, yeah, and that includes the Marvel movies and all that. Every so often, if you take, like, you know, these 2.5 hour movies, these extravaganzas, and boil down the good 3D moments, you've got approximately 4 minutes. Like in Doctor Strange, there's a lot of cool, wonderful effects. And if you add them all together, about 4 minutes of a 2.5 hour movie. It's not worth that extra money. It's not worth the annoyance of the glasses. It's not worth it. Okay? So much for that. I'm just sputtering away at all my pet peeves at this moment, and yet it is time for me to get off the air in just so many ways. It's time for me to do that because Lister is here with his wonderful show, Burn Baby Burn Clappers, coming your way in just a moment. So, I should turn the camera, shouldn't I? It's that time of morning, isn't it? Now, let's see. How do I spin it about? I think like this. No, that's just a light thing. Maybe that button? No, that's just to invite people. Why would I invite people? Sorry, you have to look at me that close up. Maybe this one? No. That one with the magic wand? Oh, no. It's just special effects. Go away. Stop doing that. This often happens. How do you... And the thing is that they change the interface every couple of weeks so that you can't figure out, okay, come over to this side, Lister, so people can get a load of you. There we go. And let me tell people, as we strip off the air, or strip onto the air, that this has been Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. Thank you very much for listening. I will be back next week from 1 to 3 a.m., and everybody, please be good to each other. Thank you. Have a wonderful morning and week and time like that there. So let me find my outro Lister. I'm sorry. I'm so woefully disorganized. Oop, I found it for a second. There we go. So, again, good morning. Take good care. Write me. That was it. Write me, jim@ourwolf.com, or find me on Facebook and join the Hour of the Wolf group or something like that, and meet me there. Good morning.
Yeah. Just a mother. Yeah. You gave me freedom of speech and the First Amendment. So I wanna remains in Callista line.
Burn, baby, burn.
Clappers. Every Thursday morning right here at 99.5 FM Pacifica Radio, it's best. Remember, the buddy system is hard and stiff. You got to support us. We are the militant canary at the end of the tunnel, yo. At the end of the tunnel, you'll find us right here. 99 Sinker, WBAI. List alive until we done burn the imperious red, white, and blue, y'all.
Let's not fall. Let's not fight. Let's get together. We all can unite and take off these chains from off our feet. Cause we gonna walk, we gonna walk.
No change.